From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of the Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
Dice Men Cometh!
Well, here we are in the Edge Radio studios on another Thursday evening for the Dice Men Cometh. And it's a bit warm and sticky here in Hobart, but the very good news is we had some rain today. I believe we had quite a few millimetres, if that's how you measure rain, just enough to dampen things down and probably not put fires out, but at least slow them down a bit. Unfortunately, I hear that our friends are in the far north of Queensland. They had a bit too much rain. Maybe they can send some more down to us.
Be nice, but not too much.
No, we don't want too much. And we hope they're all safe. Big shout out to old friend of the show, Ben, who we know has been wading around in his house, rescuing his board game collection and a few other things. Also, AOS, I think he's in that part of the world. So I hope everyone up there who's listening is safe. Things are moving in the right direction down here with the fires. But we, talking about fires.
I know. It is hot in the Dice Men Cometh studio tonight because not only are we talking about a firefighting game, and not only are we talking about a fantasy firefighting game, we are talking about an Australian fantasy firefighting game that set Kickstarter alight.
Oh, I see what you did there.
And we are talking about the Brigade tonight. So after we do all this introduction, we'll cut to a song and then we'll talk about the Brigade in a little bit more detail. But also,
yeah.
Super important. There's one important thing. Leon wants to talk about Monopoly. Because he loves Monopoly and he wants to marry Monopoly.
Well, no, but we are going to talk about Monopoly, but I promise it's probably not going to be very positive.
And then we have the real big thing, because any gamer who lives in Australia should stick around and listen to the whole episode, because the Dice Men Cometh are launching their BorderCon competition for this year, which
yes,
we did tease a couple of episodes ago.
So you mean we've potentially got tickets to the hottest board game convention in Australia?
Absolutely.
Because it's sold out within minutes.
Well, look, it either sold out in less than a minute, according to some listeners of the show, or according to the organisers, it sold out within 33 minutes, and maybe it was just the website that didn't handle it. But needless to say, it was everyone's go-to website at 8 p.m. on that particular Friday night, because by 8:33, the announcement had gone out, it's gone. By 8:01, which I know is before 8:33, I'd already got messages saying, oh, it's sold out already. So we are very fortunate to have the only two available tickets in the world to BorderCon, which any listeners will know is one of our favourite 4 days of gaming out there.
And if you want to know how important this is, last year when we did this competition and gave it away, we had two people from Perth, which, let's face it, is basically, you know, Hawaii or, you know, Canada away, come just because they won these two tickets in
which
our competition.
Amazing. So it was so much fun.
They are the board gaming golden tickets of Australia.
Absolutely. So, look, we are the Dice Men Cometh. It's Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Stay tuned for not only amazing banter and amazing repartee and informative information, but also your little golden ticket to BorderCon.
We should probably mention before you throw to a song the most important thing that we haven't said yet.
Is it episode what?
200 and bloody well 50, lads.
Woo! It's
episode
a milestone.
250 on the 7th of February, and I think it's going to be a wonderful night.
Hi, this is Matthew Dunstan, and you're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, the best podcast in Australian board gaming.
Come on and break it on down.
Oh, break it on down, Fatboy Slim, with the Latif, the truth speaker, here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And would you believe, just this weekend past, Fatboy Slim played his one and only Australian gig here in Hobart, out at our famous Mona. We were all there, of course, weren't we?
Well, no, because it was at Rest Point.
Wasn't it Mona? Sure?
Yes, because everyone who didn't have tickets had their boat and they put it up against the casino at Rest Point.
I was in Melbourne seeing Prodigy.
Well, so there you go, but it was one and only Fatboy Slim concert.
And you weren't there.
No, I wasn't, really.
Spent time?
Anyway, we're going to have a wonderful night here because we've got lots to talk about. I'm glad to say the fire we're talking about tonight is not the fire outside the window. There isn't one, by the way.
Not at the moment.
It's the fire that is the hotness, that is the fire-based fighting board game, Garth.
Mm. And it's not just standard firefighting. As we've mentioned, it is fantasy firefighting. But what is this? Tasmania has a town called Tinderbox.
Mm.
And unfortunately, the fantasy version of Tinderbox is all on fire because no one has formally admitted responsibility. There is a remarkably large firestorm above the Pyromancer's university and fireballs have just decided to rain down from the sky.
What a weird coincidence that that's happening at the Pyromancer's university.
I know. However, it is such a wonderful time to be a firefighter because, look, if you want to be a hero, now's the time. So, look, the Brigade is a 2-to-4-player firefighting game where rival firehouses are going to be trying to offer protection to those wonderful citizens of Tinderbox, or you're going to go around and around and around the town of Tinderbox putting out all those fires for all that delicious renown that you will score. You'll go to the various establishments and you will put out their fires. You will earn renown, which will gain you the loyalty of those particular tiles. And should you ever gain the loyalty of five, let's call them districts of the same type, of which there are five, or if you will gain the loyalty of five different districts, as long as one of them is the Pyromancer's University, then you will be the winner and the hero and be elected the unanimous chief warden, superstar fire putter outer of this particular town, and you will get to wear that cool hat all day long.
Well, it needs to be a pretty big hat to have those words around it completely, I would say.
Absolutely. Mm. So what is it? Look, it's an action point system semi-cooperative game because you will be working together to put out the fire, because if too many blocks are destroyed, then you all lose. But you also want to be the bestest at putting out fire and the smarterest at putting out fire, because otherwise someone else will take that chief warden. So let's just get all the way back to square one, position one, line one, and say, how do you play this game?
How do you play the game, Garth?
Good question, Mark.
Oh, sorry, Garth. How do you play the game?
Ah, that's a good question. I prepared your version, Leon, but not Mark's.
Oh.
So the way this game's going to start is you're going to start by getting your own little fire station in order. You will get your player board. You will get your fire chief. You will get two meeples, one of which will signify your brigade and one of which will signify your water wagon. You will then have a setup, be ready to go. You'll put some tokens on there to know how many actions you've got, how many crew you can accrue, how much water your water wagon can actually take. And then you're going to start creating a mathematically very random board, because the only consistent thing in this board is that there will be four Pyromancer University tiles in the middle, and you will have four rival fire stations at each of the four corners of this square, but all the other tiles will just be randomly placed. And those tiles will be an assortment of different shops and establishments, which are all beautifully drawn and randomly, as I say, located. And again, a random smattering of the five different types of buildings. So you've got ones that are the commons, you've got the noble buildings, you've got that key Pyromancer University, then you've got the merchants, and then you've got the council properties. And they'll just be dotted throughout the modular board. And then you'll seed the fire. Now, let's talk about bloody fire in this bloody game, because there's two things that I want to talk about. The first thing is, the fire meeples are sexy.
Oh, yeah.
They're a bit good.
Because they're not just a red cube. Pfft, who does red cubes these days? These are beautiful fire-looking meeples, which are massive.
Yep.
They must be, what, a good centimetre and a half tall?
I'd say 2 centimetres high.
2 centimetres tall, maybe a centimetre thick.
And beautifully sculpted sort of flickering flame figure of wood.
Absolutely.
Amazing job.
They have such board presence, which sounds good, except when you're trying to get rid of it all, because you won't do that. So you're going to seed the fire balls. Now, there is a starting deck of cards that you'll shuffle, and the first three are going to be revealed, and that's where the fire's going to start. It's all going to be bad. The university will definitely catch on fire, and then every time the same tile is revealed again on one of those starting cards, it will go from an intensity 1 fire to intensity 2, On the standard cards, it goes up to intensity 4, and if it catches on fire again, it can't, and it just becomes destroyed.
Oh.
Now, if 8 tiles are destroyed, then it's game over. If 3 of the 4 Pyromancer University tiles are destroyed, it's game over. Now, it must be said the university is a little bit tougher, so it can last and put up with more fire, but you probably may go close to losing some of those tiles. Anyway, you've seeded the board, everything's on fire, it's all on fire, everything's bad, and then player one gets the joy of going first. You know what you're going to do on the first part of your turn, Leon?
What are you going to do on the
first
part?
You're going to reveal another one of those bloody event cards and bring out more fire.
Wow, that sounds like there's a lot of fire going on.
There is a lot of fire. There are 3 different types of event cards. One is just fireballs. More fire on more spaces is more bad.
Mm.
Now, good thing is, though, you'll have 2 meeples, and we'll get to why they're good in a little while. First one, reveal more fire is bad. The second type of event card is wind. Now, anyone who's been in the same room as Mark will know that wind is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly not near fire.
Not near fire, because the wind will blow from the north or the south or the east or the west, and what it'll do is spread that horrible red fire like some form of fire going through a lot of Tasmania at the moment, and it will spread. And if there's already fire on a tile, it'll get worse. If there's no fire, it'll start catching on fire. That's bad.
Mm.
The third type of event that you've got is thankfully mostly good, because it will be a lovely event that might give you, as a fire person, the ability to get a free recruit action and get some more crew, or to fill up your brigade's water supplies, or some other good thing. They're pretty far and few between, it must be said, but oh my God, they are a double relief, because not only do you get something good, but you don't get something bad, yes, which is more fire.
No fire spreading.
So that's how you every turn is going to start. Going to reveal an event card and something more than likely bad but possibly good will happen. Then you will get to do your actions. Now, everyone's going to start with having 4 actions that they're able to do. And I'm going to start explaining the actions the same way I explained only very briefly again in a refresher to Mark and to your lovely partner Sarah, with the upgrade action, because you can only do that once per turn.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is that you can upgrade your, basically your firehouse, to either have some more actions or have more water in your water wagon or to get more crew.
Mm-hmm.
You're maximising your efficiency of firefighting or action taking or water collection.
And, of course, you want to do all those things.
Of course you do. But on the side of the box, it says it's 10 minutes per player.
What?
So you're not going to have a huge amount of time, because this game will be over before it starts. So you do want to upgrade, because you want to get crew and you want to get more actions and you want to get more fire, but none of that is relevant unless you've put out enough fire to make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
So there's your upgrade action. The other actions you're going to be able to do is move your brigade. Now, you can move up to 3 spaces with your brigade, which is one of your big chunky meeples, and in a lovely turn of events, you can't just move orthogonally, Leon, but yes, you can indeed move diagonally.
Well, I'll be damned. Strike me down, but not with fire.
Not with fire. Now, that all sounds good and well, except you can't move into another square where there is already a rival brigade, except if you have a crew that overrides that. And you can't stop where there's something on fire, because you're a firefighter and you can't let fire go unpunished.
That's right, or you can't be seen to go, oh, yeah, that'll be okay, I'll come back to that later.
Because you could choose to then just spend another cube, one of your 4 actions, and keep moving. But every time you hit a square that has fire on it, you have to end your movement. You've then got your water wagon movement. Now, the water wagon is the second and only one of the 2 meeples that you've got, and that signifies, not surprisingly, the water wagon that is your backup water supply, which is magical for 2 reasons.
Yes, it's your fantasy Ninor.
Correct. One of the things that makes it magical is that it's magical and can just fly to anywhere on the board that is not destroyed and isn't occupied by a rival firefighter. The other thing that makes it magical is all this delicious water that can add to your firefighting prowess. It'll start with having 2 and can get up to 6 water, but it's probably not going to get to 6 water because the game's over very, very, very quickly. So you can move your brigade, you can move your water wagon, or what you can do is you can put out fire, which is a very important thing to do. And the reason for that is because the whole point of this game is to gain the loyalty of Tinderbox, and the way that you will do that is putting out fire. So I'm on a square. It's got intensity 3 fire. two more intensity, it's gone, because once it goes past four, it cannot get any more burnt. It just becomes destroyed. In order for me to get rid of fire, I need to spend some water, not surprisingly. So for each one of these delicious, beautiful, refreshing water meeples, which is, again, not just a blue cube, it is a beautiful, big, blue drop cube that is...
Drop meeple, sorry.
Yeah. That is going to put out that fire. For every one of those I can spend, I'm going to lower the intensity by one. And the goal, I'll get to you in a minute, Leon, is to remove as much as you can from each of those tiles, because that's what's going to get you renown.
Drop Meeple's a good DJ name. Carry on.
There you go. So say, for example, I'm on a square and there's three fire there and I spend three water. The fire is extinguished. Hooray for me! Now, what I need to take into consideration is what's the loyalty of that particular tile, because they're all listed on there. They're easily able to see. You'll see what colour they are and who their affiliation is with. You will also see the value of that particular tile, and you need to be able to get enough renown on each tile to equal that number for that tile to be loyal to you. So say I've just extinguished three fire and the tile is three, I can get the loyalty of that particular tile, and that's important because I can then refill, which is super important because I need to refill my brigade, I need to refill my water wagon, otherwise what am I going to put out fire with, lads? What am I going to do? Exactly.
I've got some ideas, but they're not safe for radio.
Now, what I like about this little mechanic...
Drop Meeple song, sorry.
...is that should I not be able to extinguish all the fire? So say, for example, it's four intensity and I've only got three water. I still gain some renown, but it might not be good enough. I can put renown on any of the four orthogonally adjacent squares just to earn the... sort of the, I guess, the loyalty or maybe even just the renown from the adjacent neighbourhoods.
That's
they're
like,
seeing
hey,
that
hey,
I'm doing a good job
see
over
what
there.
See what I did over here? Yeah.
The good bloke award. Oh, well done. You didn't. I mean, that place burned to the ground, but, you know, you put in some effort.
But the great thing is, on these tiles, their value, I guess, in how much renown you need to spend goes from one to four.
Yeah.
And then the Pyromancer University tiles are all five. So you can be a little bit discerning in the fires that you choose to put out, because you might manage to find yourself on a tile where, look, it's only worth two and the one next to that is worth one and it happens to be a different colour, so that might help me in my end of game ability. So you can really, as a firefighter, not just focus on the fire, but focus on which bits of this town you want to save for your own selfish reasons.
It's like you're working on your reputation as you go around, and if the fire goes out... well, that's a bonus, but as long as my reputation goes up, and as you said, if you can put out a fire worth four, and then all of a sudden you've got two adjacent squares that are two each, perhaps all of a sudden you can gain renown on two squares in one go.
I know. So that's what you're going to be doing. You've got a couple of other actions, which is not surprisingly refilling the water, because otherwise you are going to find yourself stuffed. You've also got the recruit action, which is an incredibly important thing to do, because you get to take the top two cards from the crew deck, have a look at them. They've all got names. They've all got affiliations. They come with water, and they also come with a unique special ability, which might allow you to walk past fire, or it might allow you to bump off another crew and push them into another square. It might allow you to get bonuses against certain ones of the types of tiles that you've got. So, look, it sounds like there's a hell of a lot going on in this game, but Mark and I and your lovely partner, Sarah, sat down. It is 7:22 right now as I talk. We sat down at, say, 5:35.
Yep.
And we completed a game by 6:15, including rules explanation to Sarah, who had not played it
before. That's exactly right. And we hadn't played it since the prototype.
Yeah. So I am very happy to say that even we play it in the recommended game time, which is 20 to 40 minutes. It's unheard of.
And that doesn't happen very often.
Are you trying to say that I'm the weak link in the game timing chain?
No, I'm trying to say that Garth knows how to explain a game.
Look, I want to harken back to a little while ago when this was on Kickstarter, because not a small feat, they had over 2,200 backers for this little Australian game, and they raised almost $150,000, which... look, it's no Seventh Continent, it's no Nemesis, but compared to a lot of games that are raising 5, 10, 15,000, 150,000 is a lot. And you can see just about where every cent of that has been spent because, firstly, they've tightened it up heaps from when we played the prototype. It plays really tight. There's no downtime at all, and the game certainly doesn't overstay its welcome. But as we mentioned, the fire meeples, the drop meeples, the beautiful brigade meeple, which is a fireman with an axe.
And a hat.
And a fire hat. The wagon meeple. The art, the beautiful thick tiles. They are a lovely thickness. They're just like a perfect weight. The box art, the box finish, the insert. Everything in this game screams quality. And I, for one, am super excited because I am a Phantom PH fan, and Alex Winter has put together a team to bring later on, I'm not sure when, but he's bringing out the Phantom Ghost Who Walks board game with official backing from Frew Publications, who are the company in Australia that produce the Phantom comic. And if it is as half a quality finish as the Brigade is, that game is going to look awesome.
Mm, yeah, I'm really excited about that. But look, I do need to tip my hat to, as you say, Alex Winter and Ben Hoban of Red Genie Games, because this was a big deal for them with their Kickstarter. Making that kind of money is not an easy thing to do. I remember I was part of a group of Australian board gamers who got together and do a live Kickstarter live play of this game
when
the campaign was on, and that was a huge amount of fun. And I won.
Also, clearly shows the positive effect of, you know, being associated with the Dice Men Cometh podcast, potentially, you know, some placement, product placement in our podcast. It's all worthwhile. Look, I want to read you out this amazing review I read straight from the Kickstarter about this game. And I think it's, when I read back in it, it's spot on. Think Gangs of New York, but with a fantasy Daniel Day-Lewis. Not that type of fantasy. There's an awesome amount of player interaction as you battle to be the best fantasy fire crew, and so much variety in the crew, their special abilities, as well as the constantly changing board. Never play that other firefighting game again when you can play this one to fight the fire and each other. Now,
that where'd that come from?
That review was straight from the Kickstarter page. A little known Australian podcast called The Dice Men Cometh did that. I think they were spot on. The other thing I want to point out, you might think there's not a lot of firefighting games, but you'd be surprised. On Board Game Geek, there are a fire truckload. This is actually the number seven, very single digit, number seven ranked firefighting themed game. And that's if you include Red November as a firefighting themed game, which
that's a bit of a stretch,
there is,
but you
some
do fire
in there. I remember this being a good game. When I sat down and played it tonight, it's way better than a good game. It's a great game, I think.
Yeah, and look, I'm really happy to say there's already an expansion that came out, which is The Way of the Warden. It introduces a 1v-many mechanic. It allows you to do a solo version. It's got some more beautiful meeples. It's got the Pyromancer and the something else that escapes my mind at the moment. A few more crew that you're able to do and a whole bunch of other inclusions. So it's lovely to see that this game has been able to continue to be supported.
Well, they've done the right thing. Since the prototype that we played, it was a year or so ago, and we gave them our feedback, which was majority of it positive, but we said maybe this, maybe that's the other. They've clearly done that with several other people, and they've taken it on board because, as you guys said, it's how much they've refined it. Not that it was bad back then, but it was good, but now it's just how much better it's got. And the simple fact that it was probably always going to do at least half decent for itself, just for the fact that it's such a good elevator pitch. Oh, I've got a board game. It's a fantasy board game. Come on, mate. There's a billion of them. A fantasy board game where you're also a fighter. Ooh.
A fighter.
Which also happens to fight fire as well.
So, look, they've also done a lot of work in creating the Tinderbox universe. They've done Tinderbox newspapers and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's really, really cool. So, look, I do tip my hat to that. And, look, there's no denying that we are in some way biased towards Australian games, but we are so proud that an Aussie game like this has not only done successfully on Kickstarter, but also is just a good game.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Alex is a passionate geezer, and you can definitely see it coming across in this game.
So,
and
look, I mean, it's pretty clear to say that we'll give it two thumbs up.
What I was going to say is, you know, if you like your pandemics and things like that, this is like Pandemic on speed, on fire, because it just escalates and escalates and escalates, which pushes you along to act really fast. which, I mean, one of the ways the game can end is obviously the town just goes poof,
yeah,
and you go up in flames. But that 10 minutes per player is spot on. So if you're looking for something that you can play with your friends or your family that's easy to teach, that you're going to get through in under an hour, even for new players.
You can play this with kids.
Yeah.
It does say 8+, and 8+ is completely realistic. There is nothing offensive. There's no sexy fantasy stuff here that's inappropriate. The mechanics are super easy that possibly even Mark could teach us.
Yes, excellent. So, yeah, it's a game that we definitely do recommend. We're going to throw to the latest Drop Meeple track right now, and we'll be back with you in a moment.
Garth.
Hello.
It's great to be back in this restaurant again. It was so great last week.
It was so good. Did you try the burger and the sausage and the egg?
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. But Garth, I'm really concerned.
Really?
I've heard that there's a possibility this restaurant might close down.
What, and just become a cafe or a food truck?
Or it might disappear altogether because it's not quite fully funded, this restaurant / card game that's proudly Australian, that is having you learn all about restaurants and food carts and cafes and food and being the best head chef.
Well, I did look around and I thought it felt about 80% full. So, yes, we are talking about Head Chef by C-Star Games and Australian designer Peter Cricciola, which is a little 30-minute action selection, family-friendly game where you, yes, you, are vying to have that best restaurant in the whole of Eatsville. On your turn, you'll use some cubes to make some food, or maybe to disrupt your opponent's food preparation. You might use some special abilities that your character has, and your goal is just to get that best restaurant in town. So it is on Kickstarter right now. It's got about 10 days to go at the time of recording this ad. And look, it's so close to funding. That's what I like about this. It's so close, it's almost there.
It'd be such a shame for this great little Aussie card game that could to couldn't, to not get over the line. We had a lot of fun with this. It's great for kids. It's great for adults. It plays nice and quick. It's a great filler, start of the night, end of the night game. But most importantly, it's an awesome little Aussie card game that we think deserves to get made.
Excellent. If I was in a kitchen and I was told you've got to make this game, Head Chef, I would put my chef's hat on and I would chop as fast as I could because this game deserves to be served to the general public.
Absolutely. So get on Kickstarter, check out Head Chef, jump on it. We're running out of time fast and we want to get it over the line.
Woo!
Back it now.
Woo! Need to sit down. That was Foo Fighters with Weenie Beanie. You're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now sit down, everybody, because we're going to mention the M word.
Boom.
Leon.
Yeah, we're going to mention.
What the hell do you want to talk about?
So it's episode 250, lads. Doing this for 5 years or more now. So it's a bit of a monumentous occasion. So I thought we'd might do something we've been meaning to do for a very long time, and that is, whenever we tell people that we play board games, we get asked one question. Whenever we tell them that we do a radio show, and a quite a popular one about board games, we get asked this question even more so. And that is, all right, so you just play Monopoly all the time, or, oh, how good's Monopoly? I love Monopoly, yay! The fact is, the game is a juggernaut in terms of that everybody knows it. It is sold a bajillion copies. However, most of the time when people talk about their experiences with it, not overly positive for lots of different reasons. And I'll kind of give you a bit of a history lesson first before we go into the whole point of this is we're going to talk about what you should play instead of Monopoly, basically. We're going to give you the alternatives. When people finally say, what do you play instead of Monopoly? Here, you can direct them straight to this and we will tell you what to play. But the game itself is based off a game called Landlord, which was developed by Elizabeth Maggi in 1903.
Wow.
And that original game of Landlord had one simple goal, and that was to put it in front of children and have them play it. The rules were nearly identical to the modern-day Monopoly, and the idea was that natural morals in children would let them know that this is just wrong and not fair and not right in any way, shape, or form. It was basically made as almost like a joke to go, this shows you how a society where all you want to do is destroy your friends, burn them down, and one person has all the wealth is a horrible, horrible thing. I mean, it's over 100 years later, and it's more relevant now than it ever has been. It's just not right.
Mm.
So
didn't work, did it?
No, sadly it did not. Someone took it over and decided we can make money off this thing, which is teaching people to... making lots of money is not great. Well, making lots of money is fine as long as you use it wisely, but the rules in this game basically say that you have to burn everyone to the ground to do it, and you have to go out some dodgy ways. So there's two main reasons why everyone dislikes Monopoly. Well, real gamers, if we're going to use that term, dislike Monopoly. The first one is to roll and move. So the main mechanic of this game is that you roll two die, and that's the movement on the board. Now, this is a mechanic that we all grew up with, not really thinking twice about, because it was the standard. It's what you do. Yeah. In board games, you roll two die. But in a logical sense, you think about it and go, well, that just adds so much luck to everything. So there are things like World Championships of Monopoly, but the fact is that they would just math out and mitigate the fact that, okay, I need to kind of roll this, but odds are of rolling that and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that's even more boring than what I just said. But the fact is, it goes so much on luck. If there's somebody that plays Monopoly that just keeps rolling those double, you know, that keeps rolling 12 or 11. If you roll too many 12s, you go to jail, whatever. But if you roll like heaps of 11s, you'll go around that board sharpish, get all those money after go, and you'll just dominate the whole game.
Didn't you just say the other night, Garth, you just treat every dice like it's a 3.5 and you'll never go wrong?
I will thank Good Games Publishing and Guildmaster for the rest of my life because in the rule book, it tells you the average dice roll is 3.5.
Okay.
That's how I mean,
well, seven is always the average when you roll two.
Settlers of Catan, you know, starts on 7 for the robber or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not a surprising thing, but sometimes a little bit of clarity is good. So, statistically, you're more than likely to roll a 7. But when you've got two dice, of course, you're not always going to do that.
So that is, it's not great. And a lot of modern board games, very few of them use that mechanic. Although there's some that do use it, and it's not the worst thing in the world. However, I'd say Monopoly's biggest sin is the fact that, like with any game or anything you do in life, there is absolutely no clear ending to Monopoly. Monopoly is, like I said, the way you win Monopoly is to bankrupt everyone else on that's playing that game. The game could take half an hour. It could theoretically never end if people just keep going back and forth. So it keeps going until you've beaten all your other friends in a submission and they literally quit the game. That's one of the ways this game ends, when everyone says, no, we're not playing anymore. That's not a well-designed game.
Or you can change it up, as a lot of people do, by introducing house rules. And one of the house rules you often hear about is people loaning money to their friends to keep them in the game, which just drags it out.
Well, thank you for mentioning the terms house rules, because house rules are a thing that have become kind of common play with lots of things nowadays, but it was pretty much invented because of Monopoly. And it was invented because the rules of Monopoly are horrendous. And they were made that way to show you that this lifestyle in the real world is not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, enough of that. Let's not talk about Monopoly anymore. We've put that juggernaut out behind the shed, and it's hard to kill a juggernaut, but we got there in the end.
Well, I just wanted to say, when people say to me, like, what is it about Monopoly, rather than sort of drilling in, I always say, you know what, Monopoly is fine. It's 30 minutes of fun. The problem is the game's never done in 30 minutes. It's usually 30 minutes of fun in a two-hour-plus game.
Yeah.
And the last 90 minutes aren't fun.
Well, no, because it is, as you say, it's beating your opponents into submission. So there's someone who could theoretically be down to their last property in the last couple of $100 who just has a bit of luck and they're struggling from die roll to die roll to die roll. Now, look, I need to say that I'd played Monopoly once during the most recent school holidays. It was the first time I had played it, possibly since moving to Tasmania, which is now 11 years ago. However, we, for the most part, had fun. We ensured that we played by the rules, and that was, if you land on a property and don't buy it or can't afford to buy it, it goes straight to an auction.
Yep.
Whoever takes it, they get it. We made sure that...
You didn't play the free parking rule? You did play the free parking rule! You know that money is designed to go out of the game, and that's part of the reason why the game does drag on, is because people who play the free parking rule, it puts all the money back into the game and they never run out.
Yeah, Garth, this is your fault.
So he played it in about an hour and a half.
Yep.
The anger at which my 11-year-old son had in this game as he was the first player knocked out...
Mm-hmm.
Will be remembered, because if he could lift our table, he would have flipped it.
I was going to say.
But it's a massive bit of wood and no one can do that kind of strength. He ran to his room and shut the door. He then proceeded to lie on the floor.
Oh, no.
going and probably saying words that 11-year-olds shouldn't say.
Yep.
But I had fun because I won.
So yeah, not only did Monopoly coin the phrase house rules, I think Monopoly also coined the phrase table flip.
Yes, and rage quit and everything else. And, yeah, and also it has player elimination, another horrible mechanic in any game that takes longer than, say, 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
But also we need to mention all our loyal listeners would know, of course, of the website Board Game Geek. But yes, anybody new to the show might not have heard of it. It's the biggest board gaming website in the world, where it has every board game that's ever pretty much existed, and it talks about them, reviews them, whatever have you. Monopoly is ranked 16,692, which is not a very good number, and at some point it was in the lowest 10 on Board Game Geek.
But are there other versions of Monopoly that are ranked higher?
There are. The highest one I saw is still in the, I think it's in the 2,000s.
Okay, right.
And that was the newest one, which is, it's an affiliation with Nintendo. It's called, like, Gamer or something.
Racer. Yeah,
no, it's called Gamer, or, like, it's Monopoly Gamer, or something. And that was still in the 2,000s, which I have been told it might be all right, but still, but this is actual Monopoly, 16-odd thousand. Yeah. So, with that said, we are now going to tell you the games that you should play instead of Monopoly. So I'm going to start with what we consider is an obvious one, because it was pretty much dubbed a Monopoly killer as soon as it came out, and that is a Japanese game called Machikoro.
Mm.
And the reason why is because it's very similar in the sense that you're building a town, you've got dice, but it's slightly different because there's no board to walk around in. So what you do is you roll die, and then you can use that die. You'll get certain income. You can use it to buy buildings on the board. There's also a clear way of how this game ends. You're the first person to build four really big buildings in your city, and that you win.
Yeah.
And also, one of the best things about this is that on other people's turns, you're not just sitting there just going, oh, I don't care, because if they roll certain numbers,
yes,
depending on the buildings you have, you might get rewards as well.
And, yeah, I love the way it handles the roll and move mechanic, which is you roll two dice, and depending on the number, that's what cards are activated in your tableau.
Yeah.
And that's a really good, simple mechanic to understand, and not to mention with the set collection side of things, if you happen to roll the right number, you can have a whole bunch of things going pop, 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 which gets you money, money, money.
And I just want to mention, so obviously the precursor to Machikoro with that very similar rolling mechanic is obviously Catan.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Big German game, came out of the 90s, and it was one of the things that did attract people to playing games that were saying, what, there's more to board games than Monopoly?
Yep.
And I've been fascinated to see Machikoro is like a card version of Catan. So it does away with the board and the tricky moving around bit, puts it all in cards. You now know there's a game called Dice City.
Yes.
Which is basically like Machikoro, but uses a board instead of cards. So everything is circular.
Yeah.
Well, you're not talking about Talisman?
Not yet. Oh, we might mention it later.
All right.
Anywho, but with the Machikoro as well, it has several different expansions. And if you get the deluxe tin, which is actually not that expensive, you get the first two expansions in there with it. And one of them's the Harbour, which is a must play because it adds a bit more variety. The other one is called Millionaire's Row. Now, you don't have to add this in, but for somebody that, like, Machikoro is over in less than an hour. But if you wanted to make it a little bit longer, a little bit more complicated, not because the rules are horrible, but because you want to, you can add the Millionaire's Row to make it a bit more longer and a bit more complicated because you've got more things to go after.
Yep.
Which is exactly, that's how you want. If you want to play a long game, you've got the option as opposed to this is going to be a long game because the rules are rubbish.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
And that's so much better than, oh, look, this is another version of the same game, but now it's football teams.
Correct. Yes. Now, another.
Oh, actually,
yep,
just on Machikoro, there is Machikoro Legacy that is in the works.
Yeah.
So if you want to only play it once, then buy that when it comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Then a game that I've only just played recently for the first time, but it is considered a modern classic in the hobby, which is Power Grid, which is very similar to Monopoly, except it, of course, doesn't have that rule, that roll and move mechanic. So what you're doing is you're building on a map your various different power plants and different buildings, and you're trying to connect them all together. It's also got a bidding mechanic, which is very similar to the official one in Monopoly, although a lot of people never use that in Monopoly.
Correct.
So you're bidding on these different power plants and different things like that. It's also got the money management type of thing. So it's, again, like Monopoly's for kids and to teach them about, you know, basic maths is one thing, but to teach them the fact that, yeah, money comes and goes and it's kind of horrible. That's in this game as well. So it replaces that, and also the fact that Power Grid's been out for years, has that many different maps as well. So you've got all that variety, and it's just 10 times better at a game.
It teaches the economics of supply and demand and the fact that when things are really popular, they become expensive. When things are not popular, they are cheap. I don't know that I'd say it's a lot like Monopoly. It's got the paper money. It's quite a bit more complex, but it's certainly a way better game.
I wouldn't say it's that much more complex, but because Monopoly's kind of, the rules are ingrained in society, so that's why. But at first glance, it kind of looks like Monopoly is my point. Then the next one is a game that hopefully, God willing, will get reprinted very soon that we've come across that is one of all our favourites, which is Chinatown, which Garth, one of his favouritest games of all time.
Absolutely.
It's simple and it is pure negotiation. So if you like the Monopoly things of you give me that and I'll give you this and we'll do this kind of deal, and maybe, you know, if you land at my hotels, maybe a bit of a discount. All Chinatown is...
What asshole is that?
Well, you know. Anyway, all Chinatown is negotiation. You've got some tiles that you put on a board. You're building your own little shops and stuff on Chinatown, but you've got other friends like, oh, I want your florist, which is in that area that I like, and so on and so forth. And it is spectacular.
Absolutely. So.
And I was going to say, there's a lot of luck in Chinatown because you're drawing random stuff out, but you've got the absolute ability to mitigate away that luck by saying, well, this piece of real estate that's over here that's nowhere near me, I don't want that. But someone's going to want that. And so you're able to trade it away, sell it away, make it worth your while.
Yeah. I completely agree because, look, what I've found in my one game in 10 years of Monopoly is that the negotiations were long and potentially drawn out. And also, potentially, they were a 1v3 negotiation because I would be negotiating with one of my children or my loving partner, and they would say, well, you shouldn't let that deal go through because if I'll do this and that and that and that, then we can do that and make sure that Dad doesn't get anything. And look, I love the fact that my children think that way and they want to screw me out of stuff because I'll have the ultimate laugh by not leaving them inheritance.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really important, powerful part of the negotiation is to understand that negotiation in games especially is not just a me and you. Yeah. It affects the whole table. So I think Chinatown is arguably the game that does, for me, negotiation the best in a full table environment. Yeah. But play it with a timer. I know it doesn't say that in the rules, but it is so much fun when you set yourself a little 2-minute, all deals must be done by then, because it just ramps it up to 11.
Yeah, and it's also worth mentioning before that I said that luck with those, the roll and move mechanic is not a very good thing. Luck's not bad in games whatsoever. It's just that in Monopoly, there's just so much of it. Mm. The entire game can consist of nothing but luck, which is not ideal. The next one is another older game, which sadly, if you want to get, you do have to get a big box edition, but trust me, it is worth it, which is El Grande, which is not overly that similar to Monopoly. However, you've got a board in front of you, you've got guys that you're moving around the board, but also you've got the worker placement as well as the negotiation as well. You're making deals with your friends around. But the reason I mention El Grande, the fact that, yes, it's also considered a classic as well, but it's got a clear goal for how you can win. It's, there's no real hidden, you know how you're going to win. And also there's a round marker on it saying 9 rounds, this game is over. You're going to score 3 times and you're done. Mm-hmm. Which is, again, Monopoly could be over in half an hour, it could be over in 30 hours, you just don't know. All right, then we've also got Small World, which is a game that I think is great, easy to teach to kids. It's a game that I haven't played in a year or so. I could teach to somebody right now without breaking a sweat. It looks amazing.
It does.
And the replayability of it, when you've got all these different kinds of cool fantasy races that you get to mash together with these different fantasy tropes, like your furious dwarves or your, you know, your placid vampires and stuff like that. And you're building out, again, you're going across this board, taking over different areas. So you could try some negotiation, but it's probably more about smashing people and taking them out of the way. But it's an absolute belter. And for a family game, it's a game that I think you could play with the amount of variety in it. You could play once a month for the next 20 years quite happily.
So many expansions. And it's also got a wonderful iPad app.
I was going to say, one of the things I love about Small World, because, oh, look, the hugest barrier to entry to people playing new games, I think, is rules. And, you know, so many times in games there are exceptions to rules. Mm-hmm. The thing I love in the Small World is how it uses the bits of cardboard. So if you want to go anywhere, it's two. But then for every extra bit of cardboard in there, you have to add one. So if it's a mountain or a lair or whatever, it's a really simple system, but it just means you don't have to stop and explain all these exceptions to the rules where halfway through people switch off and they go, nah, too hard.
Correct.
It just makes it nice and simple. And it's amazing how that mechanic is 12, 14 years old, 10 years maybe, something like that, but just works so well.
All right. Now, one more before we throw it to a break and then we'll come back. But yep. The next one I've got, Ticket to Ride. Have you heard of this, Garth?
Woo-hoo.
It's a game. It's brand new. It's been out for about 15 years now.
It really lowered my score in the top 200 What Have You Played list.
Yeah, well, you should play it because
it's by two.
So anyway.
Because you haven't played either of them.
Ticket to Ride, again, for anybody that doesn't know, is kind of a modern classic. I would say the Ticket to Ride Europe is the Ticket to Ride base game has got an American map, which is fine. The Ticket to Ride Europe one, I think, is slightly better, mainly also from a learning's perspective for children because you're teaching them geography. If you get the American one, you're teaching them the states. If you get the European one, you're teaching them the different countries around Europe, as well as there's a few different little mechanics you can add if you like.
Do you know
as well.
The country with the most northern capital is Iceland?
Yes.
We did on Tuesday night when we got that question
What
wrong.
Did you think it was?
What did we say?
We said Oslo, I think. We knew there was a couple there very close. Yeah,
but we won, so it doesn't
matter. I mean, I just want to mention, to me, I do prefer the North American one.
Yeah, it's fair enough.
Just because it's slightly simpler. However, if you've got people that are a bit more competitive and are likely to flip the table because Uncle Joey just cut me off completely from Duluth and now I'm never going to get there and you've just totally screwed me out of 20 points, Uncle Joey. You've got that mechanic in the European one where you can use the station
yep.
to bypass one extra spot.
And also for younger people, it teaches them, you know, they've got the card management, so it teaches them to kind of look ahead to what they could come up with, as well as you said, sometimes their route they're going for might be cut off. So it teaches them to kind of think on the fly yeah. that, okay, that sucks. It might annoy them a little bit, but at the end of the day, if we're going to keep playing, going to keep trying to win, I have to go around it. I have to think on my feet, which is a very good thing.
Absolutely. So, and on that note, we're going to cut ourselves to a break. We can reformulate our brains, roll some dice and see if we come back. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And here is your song.
Hello, everybody. Your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. We'll get you back to the action in just a few seconds. But first, a few bits of information for you. If you're a new listener to the show, or even an old listener, and you haven't left us a review on iTunes, we would really, really appreciate it. We've grown in leaps and bounds over the last few years, and a lot of the reason is because of those iTunes reviews. Because if you throw up 5 stars on there, people all around the world, which we have a fair few international listeners now outside of Australia, have found the podcast because of that. Second, do you know that we have a Patreon? Yes, if you've been listening to the Dice Men for the 5 years or more of goodness we've been pumping free into your ears, if you want to give a little bit back, we're not asking anybody out there to go giving us $20, $30 a month. That's ridiculous. What I would suggest personally is give us $1, $2, $3 a month. I do that myself with about a dozen or so podcasts. I don't even know it's gone from my bank account, but I can tell you that they sure know about it. Every cent we get, we do not spend at the pub as much as we might sound like we do. We spend it on going to conventions all around Australia and hopefully very soon internationally as well. And finally, also, if you wanted to get your hand on some Dice Men merchandise, jump over to redbubble.com, put in Dice Men in the search, and you'll be able to buy t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, etc., whatever you want. So, if you'd like to support us, we really appreciate it. We do love you all. You are all our friends and family, and hopefully you will be for many years to come. Now, back to the action.
Hi, you're on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. That was a little bit of the Jezebel's Nobody Nowhere, because Nobody Nowhere wants Leon to stop talking about these Monopoly killers.
Yeah, no, I'm going to keep going, I'm afraid. So the next one on the list is a game called Mission Red Planet. Mm-hmm. Now, it is not very similar to Monopoly. However, it is not a very complicated game. It is a very good game about placing workers on Mars. But the reason I put it in here is that everybody is equal in this game. Everybody has the same amount of cards in their hand. And all you do on your turn is you play one of those cards. And everybody has the exact same one, so it's just a matter of when you want to play yours compared to everybody else. And it's just an absolute belter of a game.
Yeah, no, well, you're absolutely right. It's nice when there's such a level playing field. Everyone has the same 10 or 11 cards or can't remember how many there are, but you just go bang, each to your turn. It's quick, it's fun, and it looks amazing.
Now, weirdly, I'm going to mention a game that I haven't actually played, but I've wanted to for years, and that's For Sale. Have either of you two played it?
Yes, I own a copy.
Ah, lovely. It's a very simple game. It's very quick. It's like half an hour, if that, and it's about bidding and about buying properties and then selling them for higher prices. So if people like that about Monopoly, that's one to look at. Then we've got Suburbia, one of Garth's favourites as well, with that crazy, awesome Kickstarter version at the moment. Again, if you want to build a city, that's the kind of thing you like.
If you want a city simulation, buy that game.
Yep.
And yes, do spend the money on the deluxe super duper edition, especially if it's someone else's money.
And then one of the last ones on my list is a game called La Havre. Now, La Havre is, for me, the king of the Euro game. Now, it is very long. So if people like the fact that, oh, I like the idea that I can sit down with my family and play a game for 3 or 4 hours, we chit-chat and have a beer or so, La Havre will definitely last that time. And it might be a little bit complicated the first time you play it, but the reason I say it is that it's a game, again, you're building your own little city and you're trying to get money and all these resources. But for me, this is a game that I think I would love to have a group of 3 or 4 of my family members, you know, an uncle and auntie or whatever, that we play this once every Christmas or we play this once every Easter, and we don't play it for the rest of the year because we don't have the time to. But I think that would be, and face it, Monopoly is that kind of game for a lot of people. Yep. So I think La Havre would be good. And then finally, before I throw to Marky Boy, I've just got a list here of the mechanics of Monopoly and what games do it better. If you just want to do the roll and move, like I said, you've got the game Colosseum, which has got roll and move in it, and is brilliant. You've got Jamaica, which has also got it. Formula D, the racing game, one I played recently with my niece and my wife. Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, which is an absolute belter. And again, the roll and move is in those games, doesn't bother you in the slightest because it's not that big of an idea in the game. If you just want to chuck some dice, because let's face it, throwing dice is amazing. King of Tokyo, we mention it every bloody week. You throw a big chunky dice, it's great. A game called Tumbling Dice, where you're actually throwing dice specifically to try and get scores. And then Age of War, which is, again, throwing dice and doing stuff. And then the final thing, if you just want to be evil to your friends, which the Dice Men definitely want to do, and let's face it, that's a
key. Cyclades Titans.
That's one way of doing it. But we've got Sons of Anarchy, Nothing Personal, and Godfather Corleone's Empire are three games I will never get rid of, and they are great for hating your friends.
So many choices there. I've got heaps more I'd love to talk about, but as usual, we are running out of time, and we don't want to go without giving you the details of our BorderCon competition. You can win 2 tickets to the sold-out BorderCon convention. You can't get these anywhere else. Garth, what do the listeners have to do to win these tickets?
Well, to win these tickets to the Queen's Birthday Long Weekend Gaming Event of the Year in Albury and not Wodonga, which is BorderCon, all you need to do is get in contact with the Dice Men through either our Twitter, our Instagram, our Facebook, or even our email, which is dicemencometh@gmail.com, and simply tell us, what game do you want to play with the Dice Men and why? Now, that's a simple question. We had heaps of entries for this competition last year.
And we had audio entries, video entries, photography entries, written entries, any of those forms you can use.
Absolutely, and we will take even more entries because they are the only 2 available tickets in the world.
And not only do you win the tickets, you'll actually get to do what you say.
Absolutely.
As we did last year, we played Snake Oil with our lovely winners, and that was an absolute blast.
Yeah. Michelle and Brandon had a wonderful time, not only just playing Snake Oil with us, but for the full 4 days. It was their first trip away from their children ever. So that will stay with them for the rest of their lives, I'm sure.
So if you want to post on Instagram, just tag @DiceMenCometh. If you want to tweet and include us in there, surprisingly, it's @DiceMenCometh. Obviously, you can tag it on Facebook where DiceMenCometh, or you can email DiceMenCometh@gmail.com. See that consistency?
That's amazing. And no doubt we will put a post on those respective social medias, just reminders so that people can enter this amazing competition.
Now, this competition will end at the end of March. Our show on the 29th of March will be the final cutoff for this. So they might be about 7 weeks away from now, but don't rest on your laurels. Get them in quick and get them in fast. And then we will be announcing it the next week. I won't be here because I will be in New York being awesome, I'm afraid, but I reckon you two could probably handle it.
I think we'll be able to, and we need to make sure that listeners have time to organise any form of transport and accommodation to get there, because Albury is sold out over that long weekend for a lot of gaming.
So don't leave it too long. because there's going to be heaps of entries because you just can't get these tickets. These are the only two. I can't stress that enough.
Absolutely. So what a great way to finish episode 250. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Mark, because you are the only one who was here from day one.
Yep.
Leon, it's always nice to have you around for whenever you decide to show up. It's brilliant. You've been around for
100 so many episodes. 150 or so?
I feel like
160, I think, at least.
I feel I must have been here for at least 200. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. It has been episode 250. Thank you to every one of the listeners, because without you, we would just be here talking to each other.
Yep.
And on that note, we got to go play some games. We've been the Dice Men Cometh. This has been Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we are out of here.
Have a great week.
Bye, all.
This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.